#1 sports site in the world.
Big names.
Bold interviews.
Bold interviews.
Beyond the X's and O's.
Welcome to the fastest 2 hours in radio.
On Yahoo Sports Radio.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show.
With the one and only, the triple threat, the Big E.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell. The 6 foot former Sooner women's basketball player.
She can post, pin, and produce with some of today and yesterday's biggest stars.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Get ready to go beyond the X's and O's.
With today's star athletes, coaches, and sports figures.
This is the Big E Sports Show.
Right now.
Now from the Quicken Loans studios of Yahoo Sports Radio.
Are you ready?
Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze.
Here she is, the one and only, the Big E, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell back with you at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. It is time. In hour number two, we're going to kick off the program here with some MLB news and notes. And our good friend who is back is Andy Pondillo. How are you, Andy?
I'm doing good. Season's just rolling right through right now.
Well, we are less than 1 month from the All-Star festivities, and I look so forward to your perspective on that. But I'm going to open up our conversation tonight. Let's talk about the Astros, because the month of June is quickly wrapping up, and it seems like they are starting to stride out a little bit and play better baseball.
It's been an interesting year for the Astros, and really on paper, to look at their record right now and nearing 500, still in the wild card race, still in the division race, if you turn things around, with everything that's gone wrong, to say they're still in it, I mean, they have to, you can't feel good about this season, but you also got to look at it and say, hey, we're still in it, we still have a chance, and really leading this team, the bullpen has been almost Kansas City-esque of last year. The bullpen has been almost unhittable. Will Harris is now the closer. You have depth. You have power. You have a good lefty in Tony Sipp. You pretty much have everything that a great bullpen needs. And I think that's what's really led the Astros to close to a 500 record now.
The expectations were very high coming into this season, the 2016 season, for the Astros. Where did you think that they would be at this point? Did you think the Mariners would be ahead of them?
I could see the Mariners ahead of them. I predict the Mariners to be a lot better than what most people thought. And really, the Rangers have been the best team by far in the division because they've stayed healthy for the most part. We've seen Yu Darvish go down, but for the most part, their offense has stayed healthy. They've done well. And then the Mariners, a balanced team. They haven't actually, I thought they'd be a little better than Mariners at this point, but yet they're still competitive. I obviously thought the Astros would be atop that division as well. I really figured that it would be a three-team race, and I don't have any reason at this point of the year not to believe that these three teams can still battle it out through the rest of the year. Right now, the Rangers are obviously the favorite.
Andy Pondillo back with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He joins us each and every week in studio with our MLB news and notes. Connect with our audience. Where can they check out your podcast?
I post that on AstroChat. That's ESPN975.com.
Okay, you and I were talking earlier. The Astros, they had a very successful May. They're showing decent signs here in the month of June. But why did they get off to such a slow start in the month of April?
A lot of it is just their depth offensively. They don't have any, and they still don't. It's amazing that they're winning games right now with essentially their depth being 1, 2, 3 in the order and nothing else. And it really fell apart in April. They didn't hit. The starting rotation was awful, and the stats at least middle ground right now. Our starting rotation isn't horrible. It's not great, but it's doing enough. And really, the bullpen wasn't quite what it is right now. After you got through the first few weeks of April, the bullpen has really just been at some sort of other video game type level that we're seeing them pitch at. Mm-hmm. So pretty much everything that you could think of went wrong in April. But really, I still don't believe this team has played quite what they were capable of, what we think they're capable of. And, you know, maybe it just is who they are offensively. Maybe they're just not a good offensive team in 2016. But they've been able to get by with spectacular defense, spectacular bullpen work, and at least okay starting pitching.
Okay, so depth is an issue. But the Astros, they still have the most talented high-end players, do you think, in this division?
Yeah, definitely. Everybody would love to have Jose Altuve, George Springer, Carlos Correa. I mean, this three in the order, that can't be matched by any team out there. It's just stupid. It's three all-star caliber players. Even with Correa not having that year he did his rookie season, he's had some growing pains. He's still a fantastic player. You look at his on-base averages, right around the 350 mark. He's hitting for power out of the shortstop position. He makes plays the other shortstops don't make. Jose Altuve could be winning another batting title. And then you talk about George Springer. If you're a believer in a statistic war, he's been number two or number one in war all season, above the mighty Mike Trouts of the world. And he's just been going crazy over there, whether it's hitting home runs in the leadoff position, just getting on base, stealing bases, and then making spectacular plays in right field. The high-end talent on the Astros just can't be matched. Depth is really the issue here, and it's something that will have to be addressed at a certain point.
Okay, Jose Altuve, George Springer, but I have to tell you what, my perspective is, it's really hard to envision seeing the Astros go the distance and win it all if Dallas Keuchel doesn't get it together.
He's going to have to completely turn everything around this year, and there hasn't been anything that really has resembled Dallas Keuchel of last season. There's been a couple innings here or there, a couple games where you kind of start to see it, but the league has really zeroed in on him. It's almost like they know what he's throwing before he throws it. I don't know if he's tipping pitches. I don't know if he's lost something significantly on his pitches to bite, to break, or, you know, it should just be they could figure him out. And the scary thing about that is he may need to make a significant adjustment, and that is hard to do in the middle of the season as a pitcher. This might be something that has to wait until next year before he can go back to the drawing board, get with Brent Strom in the offseason, figure out what happened this year. There's a lot of time to salvage this season. There's a lot of time to at least be an okay, good pitcher, be a guy that can get you through 180, 190, 200 innings. He still has time to fix that. There's enough time left in this season, but for him to be what he was last year, that's going to be a far stretch, and probably the scariest thing for Houston Astros fans is, where is that top-end starting pitching going to come from? Because asking the bullpen to do what they've been doing for the entire season, that's going to be hard to do to stay at that level.
Well, before you know it, it's going to be mid-season. What is that biggest adjustment that you see that he's got to make? Because he can't make it necessarily in the offseason. They need him now.
He's got to figure out what's this going on. He's got to figure out why the hitters are just so
zeroed. Is it mechanics or is it mental?
It's mental, I think. A little bit mental, but I also think that it's just a game plan. I think that when a guy comes out of nowhere and dominates the whole league for two straight years, hitters are going to study that guy a little more than they're going to study a rookie coming straight out of AAA ball. I mean, they are zeroed in on Dallas Keuchel right now, and a lot of it happens the third time through the order. So is he showing the same stuff three times in a row? Does he need to pitch backwards more? Does he need to throw his breaking stuff more? Or there's vice versa. Maybe he just needs to attack with his fastball more. You know, sometimes I look at him and he's picking around too much. I'd rather just see him go and attack these hitters. He's getting his strikeouts recently, which is good. So there is something going on there that he's starting to pick up his strikeout rate, which we didn't see early in the year. It's just a matter of, you know, figuring it out. I don't really know. It's kind of a mystery. We've seen this happen with a lot of pitchers through the years. We've seen this happen with Justin Verlander. We've seen it even happen with the great Roger Clemens, where people just started hitting them all of a sudden, and they have to make those adjustments. Again, like I said, I fear it might be an off-season thing rather than an in-season thing.
Andy, how much does that impact your psyche if you get off to a slow start, like we were talking about in the month of April, and you don't come out of the gates fast?
I think it definitely puts a negative attitude in the players' minds. You start second-guessing yourself. You start making stupid errors. I mean, we've seen them play a lot of sloppy ball early in the season, and you really seen it with the starting pitching. When they weren't getting hitters to hit for them, then all of a sudden they were leaving pitches over the plate. They're trying to be too fine. They're walking guys. They weren't hitting. The players in the field were making errors. If, you know, everything went right, then the bullpen was blowing a game every now and then. So it's one of those domino effects where you find different ways to lose, and that's a sign of a really not a good team. You will see bad teams do this almost every single night. And the Astros were a bad team for a lot of this year. Fortunately, once again, it's a 162-game season. In the world of baseball, you can be one of the worst-hitting teams in baseball, as the Mets were last year, and still make it to the World Series. So there are ways you can cover up your holes on your team and find a way to will yourself to a championship.
We highlight Dallas Keuchel and his struggles with Andy Pondillo, our MLB weekly news and notes. But two constants that have been strong and steady: Jose Altuve, you've already highlighted and talked about that, and of course, George Springer. My question to you is, he's becoming the player that you really thought that he was going to be, right?
Yeah, George Springer was supposed to be the future of the Astros when he came up. I mean, he gets a little overshadowed sometimes by the Carlos Correas, Dallas Keuchels, the Jose Altuves of the world. These were the splash players last year. And some people are calling Springer just a guy. And he's far from just a guy, in my opinion. He's a guy that gets on base. He's a guy that can make almost any play in the outfield. I mean, you name it, he can make that throw. And then the ability to hit for power at the top of the order, on pace now for over 30 home runs out of the leadoff position. His run production is spectacular. And just really that true five-tool athlete. It's something that we've waited to see for a long time. And, you know, I'll be curious to see where he ends up at the end of the year, the way he's going right now.
Houston Astros talks continues right after this quick timeout with our very own Andy Pondillo, our MLB News and Notes. You stay close.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
The Big E.
Back with you in hour number two of Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. It is our Father's Day weekend show, and I'm your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell. All of our listeners, you guys out there, challenges for a better mobile app, and we responded with the all-new Yahoo Sports Radio app available now for your iOS or Android device. Just search Yahoo Sports Radio in Google Play or the App Store and download the new app from Gal Media. You can stream us live on the go or listen to the podcast at your convenience, all from one app. And if you don't have an iOS or Android device, no worries. You can listen on most smart devices by going to streamysr.com. We're going to pick up where we left off, talking with our very own in-studio, in-person, Andy Pondillo with our MLB News and Notes. In our first segment, we were highlighting the Houston Astros, where they are at this point as the month of June is quickly wrapping up. Let's shift gears. Let's talk about Ryan Braun, the trade scenarios. Where do you see him ending up?
This is going to be a crazy trade if this happens at the trade deadline. It really doesn't even have to happen at the trade deadline. 4 years left on the deal. They can wait to the offseason. The Brewers don't have to unload Ryan Braun right now. But with the great year that he's having, the injury history that he has, his value could go up or down really quickly. So I think this is the moment that they want to try and get him off the roster when his value is high. There's a lot of teams in on this. It seems like the Giants were the talk of the week, but it also seems like that's going to be a hard trade to make. The Cubs, you've heard their name. You've heard the Dodgers. You've heard the Nationals. You've heard a lot of National League teams. I think half the league is going to be in on this deal, and Ryan Braun ultimately, with that no trade clause, might get to decide where he wants to go at the end of the day. If I were a betting man, I think the Cubs are going to double down. They're going to go for everything this year and try to make an in-division trade for him.
Okay, so how has Ryan Braun become the hottest name in the market?
Well, Ryan Braun was the guy for a while. When he came up, he was the Bryce Harper. He was the Mike Trout. And now you see him as a 32-year-old. You don't think of him that way. The steroids thing happened. The injuries with his thumb, a recurring injury that he can't quite seem to, 100% get over. So he's gone from being the guy to being a very good player and a very consistent player when it comes to on-base percentage, comes to hitting 20-plus home runs a year, driving in 85 runs. A player that I think, for what they're paying him, $20-plus million a year, that's what these types of players cost now. So Braun has gotten to this point by just steady production. This is a good position for him to be in. He's given everything he could give to the city of Milwaukee. The steroid thing, that was an ugly time for him. He's gotten past it. His teammates embrace him. He's a good clubhouse guy. I think this is the point of the time of his career where he needs to go out and try and win that World Series and maybe not be the guy anymore, but be a guy that could be a big contributor to winning that World Series.
The Milwaukee Brewers superstar Ryan Braun, we're talking about him tonight right here at YSR with our very own Andy Pondillo, our weekly MLB news and notes. And you just mentioned $20 million a year. A franchise and organization that's not afraid to roll out some cold cash is the Dodgers. That might be an ideal target and landing spot for him.
Yeah, and I believe that that's on the list of his teams he can accept a trade to, or can't block a trade. So I could be wrong, but it seems like Braun does like the West Coast allure, so that definitely helps the Dodgers. The thing with the Dodgers is, as good as they've been in recent years, they've spent a lot of money. You wonder, where does all this money go? What is this the best that all of this cash could buy? After losing Zach Greinke, this team hasn't been the same. The offense, while it can have its moments, well, there's definitely talent in that offense, it just doesn't wow me. Yasiel Puig, it just hasn't worked out like a lot of people would have liked him to be that top-tier player. And moving Ryan Braun over there, I often wonder, is this a situation to where they're going to depend on Braun to be the guy in that lineup? And if they are, if they can't protect him properly, I don't know if that's his best destination right now. I think the Giants are a far superior team in 2016. That doesn't mean the Dodgers can't get back in this race, because they obviously do have talent. They have the ultimate ace in the hole with Clayton Kershaw, which almost feels like an automatic win every fifth day.
Oh, you bet. And of course, earlier you had mentioned the Cubs. They could go for it completely after Ryan Braun. But what about San Francisco?
San Francisco, I've been reading that that deal is going to be pretty difficult to get done, but I wouldn't put it past them. They've made a lot of moves in their World Series years. It seems like they've always made some sort of deadline move, some sort of midseason move to elevate their teams and give them the depth necessary. One of the best ones they made was the Marco Scudero trade in the 2012 year. This would definitely unify that Giants lineup. And a lot of times people think of the Giants as a team that is pitching first, offense second, and probably still is the case yet. But this isn't the old Giants. This is a good offense. This is a good place to be. Once Hunter Pence comes back from his injury, you would have Buster Posey, you'd have Ryan Braun, you have Hunter Pence in that lineup. You'd have accomplished hitters that could get the job done. I really like the Giants this year, and putting Braun on that team should elevate him, especially batting around a guy like Posey, who could carry a team when he's doing everything right.
Well, it's interesting, too, with us being here in Houston, there's been a little bit of a buzz and some rumors, perhaps, that the Astros might be linked as well.
Yeah, Astros were linked as one of the teams that were supposedly interested, and it's kind of funny because Braun is one of the ultimate Astro killers, so to see him hitting at Minute Maid Park, that would be pretty bizarre. But if there is a team that needs him desperately, that would be the Astros, because it's not so much that they don't have great hitters in their lineup. We've talked about that. It's the depth. They just lack so much depth in this order to put a guy and pair him with Carlos Correa, or bat him in front of Carlos Correa, bat him behind Jose Altuve. Braun would be an ideal fit for the top of the order of the Astros. And really, if you're talking about a team where he could really blossom with his run production numbers, I think that would either be the Cubs or the Astros, because they have such top-heavy players that once you pair a good player with them, it just elevates everybody's game.
I always love listening to Andy Pondillo. You can check him out, AstroChat975.com. And here we are, 3 weeks, less than 1 month away from the All-Star festivities. When you look and step back, you know, how the season has played out up to this point, what team has surprised you, Andy?
Orioles have been a bit of a surprise to me, and really even the Red Sox. That whole AL East has been quite quirky this year, but the Orioles, I didn't like their pitching at all coming into this year. Pitching's done enough, and our offense has been spectacular. Manny Machado, to me, is a dark horse MVP candidate. He's done everything you could ask for, play third base, play shortstop. Then the Red Sox, we really didn't know what they were. We didn't know if their pitching could hang. I don't know if it can still, to be honest, but their offense has been nothing short of spectacular as well. The AL East really showing off the bats. And don't forget the Blue Jays. They were surprisingly bad on the other end to start the year. They're coming up fast in that division. So the three teams on there, it's kind of a bit of a different order than I expected, but yet they all have something to be proud about, something that they can build on going into the second half and All-Star break.
Okay, the Orioles, the Sox, who has been most disappointing?
Most disappointing, you'd probably go to the Astros immediately after all the projections this year about how good they were going to be. If you go to the National League side, I would say even the Cardinals just a little bit. They're a good team this year, but I know what those fans expect, what we tend to expect from St. Louis is to be, you know, epically good. And then the Pirates, who just can't figure out how to beat the Cubs. They're hanging right around that 500 marker. NL Central is a tough division, and these teams, I think, have taken the brunt of it. There's still time to fix things. There's still time to correct anything in baseball. Once again, a long season, but, you know, there are some disappointing teams out there. And really, the teams that are really bad this year, the teams that are completely out of the race, I think most of those teams we could have expected maybe with just the exception of the Twins.
Our very own Andy Pondillo back with us. MLB news and notes, always sharing some great information and good news. Thanks so much, Andy, for joining us.
No problem.
Stick around. Much more straight ahead right here at YSR. Erica Wesley, author of Fast Pitch, the untold story of softball and women who made the game. It is time for our book review. We will be right back.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show
on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
The Big E.
Alyssa Walker Campbell, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are inside the Quicken Loans studios and very excited about our next guest, author Erica Wesley, who has just released her new book. It is titled Fast Pitch, The Untold History of Softball and the Women Who Made the Game. It is a wonderful read that encompasses the Depression era pickup games, extravagant national and international amateur tournaments, and also covers softball's controversial elimination from the 2012 Olympics and mounting efforts to have it reinstated. Good evening, Erica. Congratulations on the book, and it's wonderful to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Fast Pitch, the book, tremendous research that features, I will say as well, we'll talk about that, some vintage photographs. There's a ton of history that you provide in there. It's interesting, as far as your background, you're a freelance journalist. What was the inspiration of the book and putting this together?
Right. Well, I didn't grow up playing softball at all, actually. I really came at this project from the perspective of a fan. And I did grow up watching tons of baseball. My dad's a huge baseball fan, so I was familiar with that sport. And then as an adult, I kind of got sucked into the college softball tournament on ESPN 1 year.
It's good, yeah.
And, yeah, I got really into it. I was curious about it, you know, how it was similar to baseball. And I had a lot of misconceptions about it, too. I think, like a lot of people, I assumed that because it was only played by women that it was developed as some sort of women's, you know, kind of watered down version of baseball, that because they didn't want girls playing baseball. But when I started researching the history, I realized I had been completely wrong about that. And so a lot of my passion for getting these stories out there came from wanting to correct some of those misconceptions and to really share the stories of these female athletes who were playing really competitive team sports at a time when people didn't think that women were playing sports competitively at all, way before Title IX, for example.
Hey, Erica Wesley, author of her brand new book titled Fast Pitch, The Untold Story of Softball and the Women Who Made the Game. We are talking about her brand new book. And do you think you achieved the goal of the book? What kind of feedback have you received from some of the readers?
I've had, you know, I think the best feedback is from the women who, there were so many teams, I mean, hundreds of thousands of teams, you know, during the 20th century who were competing to play in the national tournament for both the men's and women's division of Fast Pitch. And it's just really fun and been fun to hear from the women who played on these teams. And it was such an important part of their lives. And so my hope is to kind of honor their experiences and make their stories more widely known.
You know, Erica, I think back to one of my all-time favorite movies, A League of Their Own, which was so popularized in 1992, and you really give us a glimpse of what these female athletes went through in the American Girls Professional Baseball League. What was it like going one-on-one with some of the former athletes? Did you have a chance to talk to some of them that were a part of that league?
Yeah, and the fascinating thing about that league is that I, of course, you know, I've seen the movie many times, and I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah.
And I had the impression that that was sort of the only opportunity for women at that time. And I was surprised to hear that, you know, there were women who, such as Frida and Olympia Savona, who they passed away long before I started working on the book, but they were these stellar players from the New Orleans Jacks Maids team, and they turned down an option to play in that All-American Girls Baseball League because they already had such a great opportunity to play for the New Orleans team. And the, a lot of the company-sponsored softball teams, like that one in New Orleans, mm-hmm. and some of the ones in California, although a lot of those were kind of on hiatus during World War II, but they didn't impose a lot of those same etiquette rules and, you know, having to wear lipstick and a skirt.
Yeah.
So a lot of the women, you know, they were kind of happy where they were and being able to wear shorts and or pants and playing at, you know, a competitive level without having to sort of play this part of being the super feminine athlete.
Well, when we go back to the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, softball was really one of the only team sports that women were allowed to play competitively, and it added just so many employment, travel opportunities that would have been unavailable to them otherwise, correct?
Right. It was often the companies that sponsored these teams would offer the women jobs at the company, usually, you know, as a secretary, or there was one woman who at the New Orleans team who worked at the brewery as a chemist. So there were a lot of different job options, which was really a big deal at that time because much fewer women were able to work and the job options were pretty limited. And so it was often a chance for job security. And then the travel, there was even in 1938, there was a group of Los Angeles softball players who got to go on this amazing trip across the Pacific Ocean and travel to Japan as honored guests, and they were on a luxury boat that had a swimming pool on board. So there were some incredible opportunities to be on one of the main players I talk about, Bertha Reagan Tickey. She was on game shows like You Bet Your Life and To Tell the Truth. So it was kind of an incredible opportunity to have, you know, a steady job and also kind of be in the limelight a little bit.
It's a compelling read. Fast Pitch, the untold history of softball and the women who made the game. Our friend Erica Wesley is joining us tonight right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us. I'm going to post the book, a picture of it, at Twitter, at E Radio Sports, and you can go back and listen to this entire interview at podcastarena.com if you are just joining us. And as we have highlighted, Erica, you really met some amazing women, people in your research. Tell us about the history of Fast Pitch, and you mentioned in the book how it's had a profound effect on the way Americans consume and participate in sports. What did you mean by that?
Well, I was really referring to its role as a community sport, and that's how it really grew. It was always an amateur sport, and it started kind of as an impromptu version of indoor baseball in the 1880s. And then by the Great Depression, it had really grown as a community game, especially for people living in cities, but in rural communities as well. A lot of times in towns that were too small to have a minor league baseball team, they would still have a community park where you could play these competitive fast pitch games. And it was nice because it didn't require much space, so it was easy or equipment, so it was easy to put these games together. And people got to root for their neighbors, their friends, their family members, and that really changed, you know, they weren't looking at strangers or, you know, it made it more familiar, and I think that had a big impact on the way sports grew in this country.
You know, let's talk some more about the development of the game, how it has evolved throughout the years. So many female athletes willing to pay the price, travel overseas for the opportunity to play the sport they love. You mentioned in the book, you know, Olympic gold medalist Michelle Smith. I've worked with her at ESPN, some telecasts covering softball. You know, she was one of the first Americans to play in the Japanese league.
Right. She really opened the door for the players who were able to go over to Japan now and earn a living playing softball. And the nice thing is that they're able to go over there and play for teams that are sponsored by companies like Toyota and Honda in the spring and fall. And then in the summers, they're able to play for the National Pro Fast Pitch League here in the U.S. So it's kind of a cool opportunity to be able to play softball at a really high level year-round.
How surprising is it that the IOC Executive Board dropped softball for the Olympics? I mean, why in the world did they take it out? I mean, I know that they dominated the Olympics, and I thought they always got really high ratings as well.
Yeah, it was a really controversial decision, and Don Porter, who he had been important part of the Amateur Softball Association and then was in charge of the International Softball Federation, which governed the sport internationally and as an Olympic sport. They had fought for decades to get the sport onto the Olympic program. So it was really devastating when that vote happened in 2005. So 2008 was the last time that softball appeared in the Olympics.
Erica Wesley, author of her new book, Fast Pitch, The Untold History of Softball and Women Who Made the Game. Congratulations on the book. It is truly, as I said earlier, a compelling read. We look forward to another conversation. Thank you, Erica.
Oh, thank you so much.
Much more coming your way right here in hour number two at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Steve Havel up next. We're going to be talking Horns Illustrated and Texas baseball.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio. Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
The Big E.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell, I want to welcome you back to hour number two at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, our interview is being brought to you by our good friends at Progressive Insurance. Last year, over 3 million drivers switched to Progressive. Call or click today and find out what you can save. It is a very special show that we have been delivering over the past 2 hours, Father's Day weekend. Always look forward to hitting and catching up with one of our dear friends of the program. That is Horns Illustrated, Steve Havel. Happy Father's Day, Steve. Good to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me on. Let's say I am celebrating a happy Father's Day weekend. It's nice for a change to be celebrated.
That's right, man. Well, you're a proud dad of four, so you got a lot of folks that are celebrating with you and for you, right?
That's exactly right. Man, I appreciate it very much. I'm glad to be back on the show.
You bet. Well, the College World Series, it is underway, and let's take time to talk about longtime and legendary head coach Augie Garrido. He retired after 20 years, and now they're in need of some new direction. Where might Texas turn?
You know, I think it's completely up in the air at this point right now. Alyssa, they've reached out to the coach at TCU, and he's decided he wants to stay there. They've given him a big contract. Same thing with the coach at Florida. Same thing with the coach at Virginia. There's been a lot of talk about perhaps the coach at Oregon State coming down here, but I think that's a long shot. Even maybe somebody from Dallas Baptist. But, you know, whoever is coming in has got some pretty darn big shoes to fill. Augie Garrido was the winningest coach in college baseball history.
Right.
He's been doing it for a long time. And if anybody can get things out of players, we used to say that Augie could get the best out of players, but you know, the direction here is that maybe they're thinking somebody else can get more, and I wish them good luck with that. So.
You know, you mentioned who might be some of the possible candidates. What is the timeline for Texas in terms of hiring a new head coach for baseball?
Well, you know, it's a very attractive job, Alyssa, so I wouldn't be surprised if it extends through the College World Series because of the fact that a lot of the guys that are in the College World Series coaching there are probably in the mix, or at least would like to be considered for the Texas job. You know, I don't think that there's a firm timeline yet. They just want to make sure that they get the right fit here.
Texas, as we had mentioned, the legendary head coach, he retired, Augie Garrido, but I understand that he's still going to be a part and serving the university as a special assistant to the athletic director. Steve, you've been around the program for many, many years. How would you summarize his contributions and just what he has meant to this program?
Well, Alyssa, I've been in Austin since 1976. Before high school, our parents moved here, and I've known two college baseball coaches at the University of Texas, Cliff Gustafson and Augie Garrido, over that time. And it's, you know, the Texas program is very, very storied. It's got, you know, those two guys and the coaches before them were also very well, good coaches. But Garrido's meant everything to this team. When Coach Gus retired, you know, he led them to the College World Series. He led them to conference championships. He's developed professional players. It's just, you know, and to be quite frank with you, Coach Greer was a good friend of mine. I've covered him for 20 years, and mm-hmm. I got to know him outside the dugout, outside the field. So it's going to be a huge loss, in my opinion, to have him out of the dugout. But at the same time, He's 76, 77 years old now. He's done his time, and I wish him all the joys of being retired. It's going to be. He doesn't have to think about anything but enjoying himself. So it's kind of bittersweet for us all, knowing that Coach didn't really want to leave. He wanted to finish his last year in the contract and thought he wanted at least to get this team going in the right direction. But he's taken the whatever they call it. It wasn't a retire. It was a reassignment inside the program as best as we think he can. And so we wish him all the luck.
The senior editor with Horns Illustrated. He's been with Horns Illustrated since 1994. Steve Habel, a dear friend of our program, is with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We would love for you to connect with us. Join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports. You can always email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. We are celebrating the College World Series. It is amazing. The Big 12 Conference sent three teams, Texas Tech, TCU, and Oklahoma State. What is your perception of the Big 12, specifically with baseball and just the strength of the conference?
Yeah, everybody was talking about how they thought this was a down year for the Big 12 Conference in baseball. It was, and what it ended up being is that the teams were so good, they were just beating up each other. Any one of those three can go all the way. You know, Tech is built on power and hitting. TCU's got a little bit of both. Oklahoma State's got two or three professional prospects on that team, so it's interesting to see how everybody was kind of getting down on the programs here, but here they are, three out of the eight in there. So very impressive, to be sure.
Getting ready to wrap up our time in our interview with Steve Habel from Horns Illustrated. A quick question, since we're talking about the Longhorns. Obviously, it's a big weekend in golf with the U.S. Open, the 116th U.S. Open, and it returns to historic Oakmont. Just talk about Jordan Spieth and just really how he was able to bounce back from the Masters and winning the Colonial and just the momentum he carried into this tournament.
You know, Spieth is a real deal, Alyssa. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And seeing him and how much he's beloved on the golf course.
Oh, yeah.
Is a pretty amazing thing. It's for a young man at his age, you know, 22 years old, and his demeanor. To be quite, you know, I think he's got a chance. I think anybody's got a chance, really. Anybody who can survive Oakmont, you know, good luck to them, too. It's just, it's really, really a hard golf course. I played it 3 years ago at the 1st of November in the snow, and it was memorable for everything that it was and everything I wasn't that day.
That, of course, was the senior editor from Horns Illustrated, Steve Habel. Big thank you to all of our amazing guests this weekend. Enjoy your Father's Day weekend. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show.